The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
When the Facts Change is brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, in partnership with KiwiBank, the bank for Kiwi looking to get ahead in business and in life, a bank that delivers expertise and banking know-how, smart advice for business owners wanting to invest, grow their business, or diversify, a bank that adapts with technology through the lens of its people and customers. It is a bank with heart that is driven by its purpose, Kiwi making Kiwi better off. An economy, in a lot of ways, is just like a really interesting sports episode. A game where a lot is happening on the field, and to get close to it, you often need to get on the field, or at least talk to the people who are on the field. This week on When the Facts Change, I talked to the CEO of KiwiBank, Steve Yurkovich, who's one of those people who's right at the edge of where the economy is changing all the time. People don't make decisions about investing or lending or saving with a bank unless they're confident. And this week we talk with Steve about how confident businesses and consumers are after a period of high interest rates, uncertainty about interest rates, and where he thinks those interest rates should go. We also talk about what's happening with climate change and the risks for insurers, bankers, and of course, landowners about dealing with climate change. We also get into the area of LVR, loan to value ratio controls, and debt to income multiple controls, our favourite acronyms, to give us a sense of how those two changes that the Reserve Bank are proposing could work together and how he sees it from KiwiBank's point of view. And then finally, we talk about the area of cybersecurity, a hot topic for bank customers and the banking industry at the moment. That's this week on When the Facts Change with KiwiBank CEO Steve Yurkovich. Well, kia ora and welcome, Steve Yurkovich, to When the Facts Change. Great to see you.
Kia ora, Bernard. Great to be here.
As the CEO of KiwiBank, you are in an unusual position in that you're right at the bleeding edge, the leading edge of what's happening with lending, bank activity, business confidence. People are doing things, saying things to you that they perhaps wouldn't necessarily say to anyone else. Collectively, what's your feeling at the moment about how businesses, borrowers, consumers are feeling about the economy right now? Because one way you express those feelings is whether you're confident enough to take out a loan or you want to put your money in the bank.
Yeah, quite a bit more pessimistic than we've seen for a while. I'm a pretty half glass full sort of a guy, but certainly what I think we're seeing, you know, business banking, the overall market went backwards. So the amount of gross lending in the market retreated. We grew our business banking, but we're quite a small player compared to the others. So I think, you know, viewers, listeners will be much more interested in what the whole market did. Business banking coming back, so hiring intentions dropping, investing in capital equipment like assets and, you know, trucks and trailers and diggers and those things off quite strongly. So there's definitely that. We grew our home loan market share really nicely, but interestingly, right off the back of refinancing. So rather than going out and buying something new, looking around for a different bank, a better bank, you know, maybe a different price. So a heck of a lot of activity in that. Very strong growth in brokers. Again, people facing higher interest rates, wanting to make sure they're getting the best deal, thinking that if they're going to have a look around, why wouldn't they get someone to have a look around for them? So all of those factors. Much more high profile news around layoffs. You know, if you think about News Hub and those sorts of things, 350 people, so, you know, shocking news for everyone involved there. And the scheme of the whole economy, reasonably small, but if you think about the signal versus that, it's actually very high profile. And so you know, media has, you know, been battling, and I think everyone understands that is the, you know, seismic shift that's gone through that industry. But those sorts of things and seeing high profile people being vulnerable brings home and makes people feel a bit more uncertain. We saw the figures the other day around the very large increase around particularly under 35 borrowers starting to miss a payment. Now, we aren't seeing that as much, but it's probably understandable because if you look at those figures, they were quite concentrated on buy now, pay later and personal loans, and those aren't markets that we've got a huge exposure to. I think it also reflects that younger people are a little less inclined to go for a credit card and big borrowing. Maybe that was the house prices, of course, as well, so they weren't going to get a home loan. But, you know, that combination of falling behind on your telco bills and, you know, mobiles and buy now and pay later, all of those things feel like a headwind, so pessimistic around that. In terms of the bank's actual defaults, they've crept up a little bit, but still, you know, not that high. So, yeah, I think New Zealanders are reflecting on what feels like pretty tough times, which I guess led us to believe that actually the economy was cooling and there was never going to be a need for a hike. And I think, you know, we were quite firm in our view that we could see the 14-odd% spend down in entertainment and discretionary spend areas through our card profile. You know, that means 1.5 people out of 10 not turning up at a cafe or a bar or a business. You know, that's how you make your money. And there's a business owner at the end of that. And so, yeah, I think it's tough going.
So how much of a factor are the interest rates in this pessimism, this caution? Because on the face of it, you know, we've got 4% unemployment. We've seen a big increase in reported business confidence about the wider economy. It's not quite so strong for reported business confidence about individual businesses' own activity. But, you know, 4% unemployment, you know, way back when we had a recession in the early 90s and we were up at 11%, you would have killed for 4%. So how much of a factor are those interest rates? Is that what's really slowing things down?
Yeah, I'd answer in two ways. So one, if you have got a home loan or borrowing, it's really real that your discretionary income has been significantly impacted. So, you know, and what will you cut back on? You would cut back on entertainment and dining out and discretionary entertainment spend, and that has a big knock on to cafes and bars and hospo. So definitely see that. And so I think, you know, you're out and about and you see less people out and about, that sort of gives you this feeling that things are tightening. If you're not a borrower, I think it's sort of like this sort of gloomy cloud that you look around and say, you know, things aren't as good. You know, people I know are doing it tough. Maybe I should just sit on my hands. Now, there will be also other people that see it as a big opportunity that, you know, properties or prices have perhaps come back a little bit or stayed flat, less buyers in the market. So, you know, real estate agents calling it much more of a buyer's market. So, you know, there's opportunity all the time, of course. But no, interest rates do play a big factor. And I think when you have mixed messages about, you know, are they going to be falling? Are they going to stay as high as they are for a long time? Those aren't positive sentiments.
Mm. Because last week the Reserve Bank held the official cash rate and was seen as being slightly dovish in its outlook, but its forecasts simply say it's up here for the rest of the year and we're not going to do much with it until next year sometime, far enough away that they're basically saying they're not moving. Whereas, you know, there were a couple of economists even suggesting, and the markets were pricing in a sort of a one-third chance of a hike last week. Now, that didn't happen. But, you know, what's your feeling about what the Reserve Bank should be thinking about and doing with interest rates?
Well, I thought Adrian did a great job, the Reserve Bank Governor, on your podcast the other day talking about it. So I thought he, you know, if your people are super keen to, you know, hear from the one of the people that's making these decisions, I thought that was a really good listen. I think the thing for me was I think there were 27 economists who called held and two, I think, called hike, and one of them was quite a significant hike. And I think, I don't know what it's called in the science of the things, but I think there is a bias towards that bad news when it's like that. And I think that did shock the market, that there was this feeling that particularly strong migration, very full employment was going to, and, you know, lack of availability for stock and rentals was going to drive things up. But that's certainly not what we saw. And, you know, there is a very broad impact when you get someone calling for those sorts of things, that people are making these decisions about rolling their mortgage and stuff like that. And so I think as banks, we've got to be really careful about keeping independence for the economists, but also being responsible about just making sure that we're really clear that this isn't about grabbing a story or clicks. You know, this has to be a really well-formed view. There's room for colliding perspectives and different views, but I think we have to think about that really, really carefully. And certainly we've spoken to our own team about that, which is you want enough room and freedom to make your own call, but you also got to understand that, you know, hedging positions and markets react to these things and all that sort of stuff. So there's quite a broad impact to it. So, yeah, no, it was an interesting time, but we were very firmly of the view, and we are of the view that actually we're going to see cuts a bit sooner, that things are slowing faster, and that you can understand Adrian's perspective as the Reserve Bank Governor, which is we are above the target. That's the facts. And I thought you did a great job, as I mentioned, talking about that. They are trying to grind it down, but, you know, I guess my perspective at the half year was you don't need to jam on the brakes. The brakes are already on. And, you know, I don't think a really hard landing and rocketing through that 3% is a great plan. Mm. You know, I'd be much more comfortable that we sort of, you know, trickle our way down, and maybe it takes a little bit longer to get under 3, but, you know, there's human beings and families at the end of this stuff. You know, we're just hitting the number in itself isn't winning for me.
Mm. Now, since we last spoke, we've also heard from the Reserve Bank about what it would like to do with debt-to-income multiple controls, in which it said second half of the year we'll look at bringing in a debt-to-income multiple control for investors and for first-home buyers or owner-occupiers, different rates. But at the same time, we'd look to loosen the loan-to-value ratio restrictions. What do you think of that, two-way movement idea?
Yeah, well, I think it's really sensible, actually. The debt-to-incomes for me are about protecting ourselves in the next cycle. Call that a boom or, you know, value appreciation or reset, whatever you want to call it. That's much more sensible for me to be launching those into a market where they're not really going to impact where the flow is, but understanding that if, you know, rates drop and prices rise and, you know, things are feeling a bit more rosy, that you've actually had time to embed these things and that customers are aware of that's the fact. This is what's coming. This is what will apply to you. I think the worst thing is, geez, this thing's got a weigh on us and knee-jerk changes, which isn't fair on people. You know, and you can see that when the changes come in, that people might have been, particularly in the urban markets, you might have been saving for 5 or 6 years to get your deposit and suddenly the rules change. I don't think that's the kind of society that we want to live in. I think it's much better to signal to people, hey, this is the sort of range of affordability compared to income that we think is sensible. As we said, it's not going to slow anything at the moment. You know, let's think about that. I think if you think about LVRs and where they are at the moment, I think you can afford to loosen those settings a bit. I think about it, you know, if you find a decent motorway in New Zealand, and there's a few of them, very few, it's sort of like saying, well, the speed limit can be 110, not 100. And that might mean that, you know, when you come off the motorway, it's still 50 and that's fine. But actually, when you're on the open road and the conditions are right, you can afford to go a bit faster. And that's sensible. So, you know, I think it's a good choice. I think it's, you know, thought through, and in the near term, you know, I'd be worrying about other things if I was a borrower.
Because if we do see interest rates fall later this year and into next year, and we see an official cash rate which is closer to what people talk about as a neutral rate, which could be 2.5-3%, there would be a temptation for some people to use relatively high debt-to-income multiple controls, be it 6 or 7 or 8 or so, to really borrow a lot, whereas a debt-to-income multiple control, in effect, is a type of guardrail that means that if you do come off the motorway a little bit quick, you're going to hit the guardrail and not go flying off the edge.
Yeah, that's right, 100% right. And I think that's what you do want, which is people get a chance to make, you know, measured decisions about those things. And I think that does give people a good opportunity to think those things through. And, you know, I guess memories fade. I mean, you've been doing it a decent amount of time to know that, you know, it's called a cycle for a reason. And my view is always that the good times probably don't last as good as you think, and the bad times probably don't last as good as you think, and you just got to sort of look through that. But I do think those debt-to-incomes help you understand that, you know, if there is a big change in interest rates, and I hope, you know, that we won't see one like we've seen, which is pretty unprecedented, from super, super abnormally low to, you know, higher than the long-run average in such a short time period, that sort of shock. But you can see rates come up and down, you know, and you need to. That's why we have those test rates, which even if you're borrowing at 5, we might be testing you at 8%. that's why we do that, because over the period of your borrowing, which could be 25, 30 years, but more likely, you know, most people are thinking about it in sort of five-year cycles, rates can go up quite a lot and down quite a lot during that period. And so I think that helps people.
When the Facts Change is brought to you in partnership with KiwiBank to help you understand the issues affecting the economy. And that's what their team of experts is here to do too. Here's KiwiBank economist Sabrina Delgado on what's happening with the labour market in Aotearoa.
Our slowing economy gives way to higher unemployment, and we're seeing tightness in the labour market quickly abating. Both a recovery on the supply side, with our surging migration boosting labour supply and loosening some very tight labour market conditions. But now a stronger narrative is coming through. As consumer demand cools, so too is the demand for labour. Firms are no longer hiring with the same gusto. Already, unemployment has started to lift from record lows, and we expect that to continue throughout 2024.
Visit kiwibank.co.nz to stay up to date with detailed economic analysis and forecasts from Sabrina and other KiwiBank experts. They take big issues from both here and overseas and make them relevant to Kiwi businesses.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, just thinking about the last year or so, we've had Gabrielle and the Auckland anniversary floods as a big issue. Our most expensive natural disaster, aside from the Christchurch earthquakes, and putting us onto the map, if you like, as one of the riskiest places in the world to be a reinsurer. What's KiwiBank's thinking about how to measure the risk of climate, sea level rise, climate events on a home? Because we've obviously seen quite a few homes in parts of the country, you know, made unlivable and in some cases, you know, a place that are dangerous. So what are you thinking about
there? Well, lots actually, and it's enough to give you a bit of a migraine if you suffer from them, because there's so much going on. I was in the Hawke's Bay in the weekend, and as you're away on your way out to, you know, I didn't go East Valley way, we flew over it, but went the other way out towards Havelock, you can still see the damage out there. You know, you can see the spray paint signs saying, you know, why can my neighbour live here and why can't I? So there's a really deep emotion about these events, and they are terrible, terrible events. There's the sort of, I think, the unarguable science that things are changing and that we need to prepare for those. There's the difficulty around what the timing is of those sorts of things and how fast or slow do you move to stay in lockstep with what customers can afford to do. There's the kind of very uncomfortable truth, and a friend of mine who's an expert in insurance was telling me, and I rely on his view, that we're the second worst market to be an underwriter in behind only Bangladesh, so small country with large exposures, which is never good for reinsurance. You've seen globally, you know, you and I talking before the podcast, you know, states in America basically uninsurable. You see, you know, different markets like Japan where people elect to self-insure to a much higher level because they have very high savings, but they're a very big market. And so, you know, you might just reinsure 45% of the value of your home, but because of the deep markets, the reinsurers come back in and you've got good savings so you can get back on your feet, which is a very, very different situation to New Zealand. I think one other thing about high interest rates and, you know, very significant premium increases, say circa 20%, 25%, I don't think would be that unusual. You know, the affordability for people, you know, perhaps it's older people or people on one income, they're going to have to start making choices, and that's a really challenging time. The banking industry and the insurance industry, to the greatest extent possible, are trying to work in lockstep so we don't strand people. But there are certainly areas of Aotearoa that you look around and think, I'm not sure, A, we ever should have built there, and B, I don't think we should build there again. And that's all right to say from, you know, sitting inside the studio, but if that's your home and where your whakapapa is and where you come from and the place you belong, you know, people feel strongly about not wanting to move, and that's okay if it's your choice. But if there's a lender and, you know, we're relying on you having insurance, that can get complicated. And there's this weird dynamic that, you know, if a bank with a big share was decide, you know, we don't like a particular area, you know, is that an opportunity for others to come back in and lend into that area, or does everyone start to retreat? You know, if a small insurer decides to go with risk-based pricing in quite an aggressive way, that's one thing. The very large insurers start to do it, and it's a different thing, you know. And I think that's, I mean, and, you know, climate-related disclosures are evolving and we're making choices there. Like, it is a really wicked problem.
I'm curious, too, about the relations between the banks and the insurers, because there's an unusual connection here that's probably different to any other type of business, where the timeframes for when insurers change their policies and their pricings are different and often not in lockstep with how banks price their loans or make decisions about loans. And from a bank's point of view, they obviously don't want to lend against some land and a mortgage on that land where suddenly it's not insured, or the cost of the insurance means it's very difficult to stay living there, or the real value of it to someone living there has dropped because of that. So how are you ensuring that you don't have this information asymmetry where the insurers know and believe that this is a risky place, but the banks don't necessarily know that, and the owner is stuck in the middle when you have the moment of truth is when they're trying to sell their property?
Yeah, I mean, even just sort of stepping back so people are aware of that potential situation, you know, say for simplicity's sake, you know, the land is worth $100,000 and the dwelling's worth $100,000, so the value of the property plus improvements is, say, $250,000. You know, if we lend at an LVR, loan-to-value ratio of 50%, you know, we've lent you $125,000. But if you decide, you know, the following day after the loan advance to cancel your insurance, which you can, which is, you know, your point, which is you can't ring, yeah, I mean, it's fine if you want to ring the bank up and say, I want to repay, but you need to give us our money back. I can stop my insurance. And the insurance doesn't have to say, where are you going to? So, you know, we could suddenly end up with a situation where we've got $125,000 on, you know, $100,000 worth of land and then, you know, whatever the house is worth. And so it can happen pretty fast. I always worry in this situation that typically the banks have done their homework and have good information and so look after themselves. And generally speaking, because of EQC and a whole lot of other things, we'll get our money back. But if it's your life savings that's tied up in the difference between what the loan is and what the value of the property is, you know, you're very exposed and that's difficult. There isn't a central way for banks to understand that insurance is current. We know at the time when the loan is advanced, there is an obligation under the loan agreement for there to be insurance and for that to be current. But actually, there isn't a central register that lets everyone know what the current state is and who's insured where.
Is that something that we should have, or something that's been worked on?
It used to exist once upon a time, and it's faded over time due to choices made by individual companies and other things. And so, you know, my personal perspective is I think these are the sorts of data inputs that you really need to understand when you're making choices. You know, we have done a lot of geo mapping. You know, I think it needs to be hand in hand between insurance, banking, the Crown, you know, all sorts of scientists and those sorts of things to try and work out where the real hotspots are so that you don't overreact and price people out where you don't need to, but you also don't underreact and leave people exposed. And so, you know, there's a truckload of moving parts. And I think it is one of the areas where there's so much to unfold, you know, really is, and it's really challenging.
And we're lucky in a way in New Zealand in that the regulator of prudential standards in banks is also the same regulator for insurers, and the Reserve Bank has to think about the capital strength of both banks and insurers and have said that they are very focused on the potential impacts of climate change. This week they've put out a paper asking questions about capital weighting and changes in weightings for climate risk. Is there room for the Reserve Bank to be the shepherd, if you like, to bring the sheep into the same pen?
Well, I think they can make their expectations really clear. I mean, it's a great point that you make that there is a shared stakeholder, and I think that's really useful. You know, my sense from the discussions I've been involved in is that the New Zealand Bankers Association and the Insurance Council work together well. And I think that's really important that they do that, that they continue to try and work with the idea that we have a shared customer that's the one that we're trying to look after and make sure that they get a good outcome. So I think there is a willingness to do that. And I think it needs a sensible, coordinated response. I think the worst sort of situation is sort of knee-jerk reactions from individuals that leave real uncertainty in the market, and that's not good for anyone.
Mm. Just finally, looking ahead for the rest of 2024, we've had a change of government. Some ministers are getting their feet under their desks and decisions are starting to be made. What's your feeling about how the economy, consumers, businesses are going to be travelling through the rest of the year into next year?
Yeah, look, I think what I see is, you know, pleasingly, from my perspective anyway, a sort of sense of that options are on the table in terms of those large infrastructure investments, you know, universities, roads, hospitals, schools, all these big ticket infrastructure investments that are required and have been difficult to achieve for many, many decades in New Zealand. I think an openness to exploring how you might stand up the finance for those other than borrowing off the Crown balance sheet is encouraging. And I think if you can get some of those core pieces of infrastructure, and, you know, for instance, to think about the, you know, an alternative road to Whangarei from Warkworth, for instance, you know, the Brenduins have been, you know, very, very difficult. Northland economy, it's been very, very difficult. Access to the port and forestry, all those things are difficult. You know, that to me is an absolute no-brainer to build. But you also look at the Crown balance sheet that's pretty stretched and say, look, does it have to be done that way? And I think the toll road between Auckland and Warkworth is a classic example. There's an alternative route if you want to take it. It doesn't cost you any more or any less than your road user charges and your licensing fee. But if you want to pay your $3 or $4 and get there in 50 minutes consistently, you know, and that's available to you, that's a really good choice. So I think there's demand for those sorts of things. I think some of the things around, you know, removing and getting clear about who's who and which entity is responsible in financial services around the Financial Markets Authority, Reserve Bank and Commerce Commission, taking the noise out of the system, those sorts of signals that we've seen people moving on reasonably fast, like Minister Bailey, from our own perspective, think we aren't. I don't personally believe we're going to see a reduction in a focus on the customer's good outcome, but actually it should be way clearer. You know, my personal view is let's have one regulator who's a real expert at, say, looking at cybersecurity, not three that are having a squiz at it with respect to them. So I think those sorts of things are helpful. Some of the other things have, you know, really stirred at really emotional issues, and I don't think, you know, that's ideal from my perspective. But, you know, perhaps they lead to a more meaningful dialogue, so hopefully that happens. But, you know, certainly the government that promised that they would get up and running in that first 100 days looks like they're trying to do that. But obviously proof is in the pudding and in the delivery.
You mentioned cybersecurity there. What are some of the threats or the issues around for banks on cybersecurity, not just for their own security, but for customers who have bank accounts?
Yeah, look, I mean, scams, frauds, cyber are really, really, really important issues. The challenge is the threat actors or the bad guys, if you want to call them that, are distributed around the world. They can operate at very low cost. You know, there's a dark market where you can buy all sorts of nasty things to attack big businesses at a very low cost, and you spend a lot of money to protect yourselves. You know, my gut feel is that the threat across fraud and cyber is doubling every 12 to 18 months. And so if you're in a business that's got some sort of exposure to cyber, which I think every business has, but some more than others, if you're not doubling your, you know, protections and defence at the same speed, then you're falling behind. And, you know, there's not that many areas that you look around at your business and think, you know, I'm going to be half as good as I was 12 to 18 months ago unless I really, really push myself. So I think, you know, that's the advice when people ask me about these things, that I think, you know, you've got to be looking at that and investing hard. The hard thing with frauds and scams, which is getting a lot of publicity and absolutely understandably, is, you know, it's a real intersection of a very, very stressful and distressed customer experience and situation. growing very fast because it's very lucrative if you're a bad actor and there's a lot of money to be made. And actually it's quite a hard thing to defend. And, you know, one of the things that people talk about is, you know, the bank should have done more and should have spent more and should have been more ahead. And maybe that's absolutely true. But we are certainly running at it very hard. But we also need to not break the system on the way through. Like, I don't think many New Zealanders would be keen for us to go back to the bad old days where it takes 2 days for your money to turn up. So, you know, there's a lot to be worked through, but I get the point that we need to work on it fast and we need to be really investing in it. I'm on a call with all the chief executives from banks every 2 weeks, and there is no doubt that people's interest is very high and we're trying to deliver an improved situation for customers. We've got a 24/7 scam centre. We've paid out more and tried to take away harm more than ever, and we're going to have to do more.
Steve Yurkovich, the CEO of QBank. Steve, thank you very much for being on When the Facts Change. When the Facts Change was brought to you by the Spin-Off Podcast Network, together with KiwiBank. Visit kiwibank.co.nz to find out how KiwiBank are making Kiwi better off.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.